Welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. This is episode number 53, and today I'm bringing back to the show, you know, he is Locked On Patriots podcast host, Pro Football Weekly, Big Blue Review, Inside the Pylon, Mark Schofield. Glad to have you on again.
Matt, always a pleasure to be with you, my friend. I know we're going to talk some difficult quarterback evaluations. And as I said before we hit record, we could pretty much just take the combine list of invites, slice maybe three or four names off that and say, those are my difficult quarterback evals this year. Basically the entire list. I mean, they're all hard.
Yeah. It's just that kind of year. What makes a difficult evaluation in your eyes?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that go into it now that make it tougher. One is the fact that there's – and it's getting more – you're seeing more overlap, but we're still seeing a divergence between what teams are running at the college level and what teams are running at the pro level. And so there's that dichotomy between scouting the traits, not the scheme, but sometimes the schemes make it so tough. So that's one part of it, you know, is that we're seeing quarterbacks do an X – and we're not so sure they're going to be asked to do X in the NFL. They might be asked to do X plus Y, or they might be asked to do just Y in the NFL, depending on the landing spot. And that's always been a tough thing, you know, trying to put together the scheme fit and things like that. So that's one part of it. The other part of it with this class is we're seeing more quarterbacks that don't fit the mold, whether it's a Kyler Murray, whether it's a Tyree Jackson, whether it's a Gardner Minshew. You know, we're seeing these quarterbacks that maybe are outside of what the league types to look for. And so we have to balance our own sort of personal thoughts and feelings on these quarterbacks with how we know the league is going to view them. And a perfect example of this from a few years past was a guy like Vernon Adams, who yeah. I liked, but realized that the NFL is not going to like him. You know, in my eval and write-up of him, I said basically, you know, for each quarterback, I always have a 1 in 3 year projection. And I said, look, the 1 in 3 year projection on him is next year he is going to be in the CFL. Like, that's just where he's going to go.
Right.
Because we know how the league views quarterbacks with his skill set right now. Are we ready to say that quarterbacks with that kind of skill set, and I'm not making a one-to-one comparison here between him and Kyler Murray, but are we willing to say that quarterbacks with that more kind of skill set and that sort of mold are going to be welcomed to the NFL? And so that makes it tough. And it's just also a strange year for the quarterbacks in general, because the past couple of years we could have said, these guys are good. You know, these guys aren't. This is your top five. And everybody sort of coalesced around that. This year, it's a little bit different. I mean, I think there's a growing consensus of QBs 1 and 2, however order you want to put in them. After that, I don't know. It's more like the Mariota, you know, Winston year than anything else, where it's like, I don't know. And so yeah. It's just a strange quarterback class. And you and I are always the two that pick up the sword and the shield. And we literally joke about that from time to time, how, you know, every year it's this is the bad quarterback class. We can't wait till next year. I remember you and I talking about the Mariota, you know, Watson, Trubisky class. And everybody said, oh, we can't wait to get our hands on, you know, Sam Darnold. And you and I were like, hey, come on. Let's not ignore these guys.
Right.
And here they are. Right. We saw Mahomes posted the tweet of him and Watson and Trubisky at the Pro Bowl being like, people said our class wasn't good. And I wanted to be like, wait. Matt and I said you guys were good, you know? But this yeah. year it's a bit tougher. It's a bit tougher to fully defend these guys. And I still like this group. It's just different.
Yeah, it is different. And it's funny that you talk about it from that aspect. I think one of the things that just touching upon what you just said about how, you know, how classes are and how people look at it. I think one of the problems with this whole draft and analyst game is that every year we have people talking about how the class is going to be for the next year. So, right. you know, they'll sit there and say, oh, well, the 2017 class isn't going to be very good. The 2018 class is going to be great. You know, the 2019 class isn't going to be much. And then you'll have, and as a result of that, they set an expectation. But in truth, I look at that and I think, I'm not listening to anything that they have to say, even if they're knowledgeable, respectful, respectable in terms of the craft that they apply. The fact of the matter is that they haven't watched enough. They haven't seen enough. There's not enough available for them to watch, in my opinion, to actually make those types of statements. They're making those statements because they're on TV,
right?
Because they need to make those statements. It's just the nature of their job. So, you know, they may deny that vigorously, but they're full of crap. You know, I mean, it's just, and that's okay. I mean, sometimes you have to do a job where you're asked to be full of crap, and you have to kowtow to that. And I think that they do. And that's where I think, like, you and I have the advantage in that respect, is that we don't have to kowtow to that in the way that somebody made for entertainment does.
You know, so what's interesting is we're coming up on the 2-year anniversary of a piece I wrote. The grass is not always greener and development is not linear. I wrote this over at ITP when people were crushing that 2017 class. It was right after the combine when everybody was talking about Darnold. And I looked at sort of the early mocks, and mock drafts are like the bane of our existence, right? Like, we understand that we have to do them. People understand that they have to do them. But the early mock drafts, I think, are the most amazing ones, because you get the draft done, and then in May, in June, or even April, you're saying, okay, this is your early mock draft. And some early mocks, and again, I'm not making fun of people here, because again, they have to be done. You know, they're the double-edged sword of the football world. But some early mock drafts, say in June of 2011, you had guys like Matt Barkley and Landry Jones being mocked as, oh, these are first-round quarterbacks next year. Or guys like Tyler Bray and Tyler Wilson the year after, or Brett Hundley a year after that, or, you know, a guy like a Brett Hundley again the year after that, or Connor Cook, Cardale Jones, and Christian Hackenberg the year after that. Because we always look to the next group and say, oh, these are the guys that will be coming up. They're going to be entering the next draft, and we expect the development to be there. And we're talking about 20, 21, 22-year-old kids. It doesn't always work that way. And in each sort of cycle, there's guys that aren't even thought about, aren't even mentioned, like a Jared Goff and a Carson Wentz, or, you know, the following year, a Trubisky. You know, and I had an early mock or a quarterback watch list before that year, and I didn't even include Trubisky because you don't know. And so, like you said, we don't have the full set of data. Data being whatever you want to see, games, stats, film, whatever, on these guys yet. And so the idea that the next group will always be better, maybe sometimes it pans out, but often it really doesn't.
Yeah, totally. So let's start off with one, Kyler Murray, because you and I both devoted a good bit of time to Kyler Murray this week, it appears, in terms of putting out content with him. And I would definitely agree with you that he's a difficult evaluation. And I think the first thing that I would bring up with him that makes him difficult for me is that there are so many skills of his that you can look at and say, well, physically, you know, here he is, he's physically underwhelming in terms of what you normally look for from a quarterback, in terms of size, dimensions. I mean, he's legitimately a small dude. And then on top of that, but he has the elite physical skills in terms of, you know, he can throw the ball really well. And he's obviously, you know, as I joked, he's kind of like the road runner from Looney Tunes in terms of his speed and quickness, you know, and flits around the field as fast as he does. It's almost like sometimes you look at him and you think that he's disappeared in smoke and reappeared in smoke, you know, at another area of the field. What is it about Murray for you that you found to be a difficult evaluation?
Let's start sort of on the macro level, because where I struggle with him, this is the ultimate sort of push-pull that I'm going to have to figure out in the next couple of weeks. Do the results outweigh the process? Because every other quarterback I've ever studied, you look at the process, right? You look at, you know, they break the huddle, they get to the line of scrimmage. What are they doing? You know, are they calling out the mic? Are they active pre-snap at the line of scrimmage? How does their mind work? How does the mental process unfold over the course of a play? Do they have struggles when the post-snap look doesn't match up with the pre-snap look? How do they handle and respond to pressure from both an athletic standpoint as well as a mental standpoint? How do they handle changes in environments, you know, whether it's a defensive coverage or defensive pressure? Do they drop their eyes in response to that? Do they keep the eyes downfield? Do they seem to crack when the going gets tough, or does their competitive toughness push them through that? So all of the process questions that I always focus on with these quarterbacks, do I throw those out the window with Kyler Murray? And, you know, the video I did is just one example over, you know, the RSP of, you see the process with him, and I don't agree with it, but the results are in many cases phenomenal. You know, a long touchdown run he had against Army, where I would want any other quarterback to handle the way that play unfolded in a different manner. But with him, his playmaking ability just makes you want to outweigh all of that. So, you know, then the piece I sort of did, and the ultimate question I have is he the true mold breaker? Is he the paradigm shift in type quarterback that is going to make people like me, who have thought about this position way too much and almost to a disgusting extent, throw out everything we've been taught, throw out every way we've approached this position and say, look, the results speak for themselves. And so how he gets there doesn't matter. But that isn't something we would do for any other quarterback. I mean, you look at the quarterback that he's often going to be compared to in this draft because of the fact that they're becoming the consensus number one and number two guys, Dwayne Haskins. And for sometimes with him, I feel like the process is great, but the results don't match up. I feel like every time I watch him, you watch his game against Purdue, for example, and it's a game that Ohio State lost. He threw it 73 times in that game. And I feel like my notes, and this isn't just the Purdue game, but every other game, great read, great decision, great pre-snap involvement, great processing, great thought process. Love the thinking here. And then he misses throw. And then with Murray, it's the opposite. The process seems a little bit cut short here, you know, but yet he makes this ridiculous throw off platform, or he outruns everybody to the end zone, even people in the secondary and the second and third levels that had the angle on him. And so both of these guys are going to be difficult evaluations for me. With Murray, it's just, do we take everything we've thought about the quarterback position and cast it aside because the results outweigh the process? And I was speaking with Bryce Rossler, who, you know, works over at Sports Info Solutions, does some great work at ITP and some other places. And he was saying, look, when we think about quarterbacks, the results, they always outweigh the process. And just like, that hasn't been the case. You know, if it were, you know, we'd be talking about, you know, Colt Brennan, 10-year NFL quarterback, or Timmy Chang, or other guys that put up ridiculous numbers, because for so long, the process has always outweighed the results. And we're talking about the NFL, the perhaps most risk-averse collection of decision makers we have seen in generations. They're not going to look at least from the guys we've been studying and thinking about for the past couple of years, they're not going to look at the results and say that they outweigh the process. But maybe we're shifting to that era of new NFL evaluators where they say, look, we can get the results to work in the NFL. Maybe that day is finally here, a day that people like you and I have been wondering it would be coming for years now. And so that's why he's a tough struggle for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for me, where he's a tough struggle is, I loved how you explained that. And it's funny because for me, I look at Murray and I think that he's a player who I look at just specific plays and specific instances, because I've tried very hard to evaluate quarterbacks based on as much as possible that's independent of what happens around them. And that's weird to say, but I'm trying to isolate the decisions that they make. And in the same way that you talked about, is that a good decision? And you might say no, but it worked out. And there are enough of those decisions that I've looked at with him where I think it worked out, but I have real serious questions about whether it would work out in the NFL. I think that also what I see with him that concerns me is that his play is all over the place, because there, you know, on the one hand, you can see ridiculous accuracy in at several levels of throwing the football. And on the other, you can see him airmail wide routes. I mean, just like, you know, he can airmail throws that are literally less than 5 yards away from him. and just look like he doesn't even belong on the field. There's times that I watch him as a runner and I think, wow, it's amazing that he can, that he can speed past these guys and knife through, you know, this crease or do, you know, kind of create space in the manners that he does. And then there are times I'm going, will you please stop trying to outthink yourself three times, but, you know, after you made your first move, and would you, you know, and look at him and go, you're going to get hurt, you know? And then on top of that, he, mm-hmm. you know, he waves the ball around like a drum major at a historic black college, you know, on a halftime show. You know, he's waving around like a baton. I mean, it's like, you know, that in itself, and him not being the strongest guy because of just his size, I think, yeah, the minute he gets touched, the ball's coming out. So I want to look at, I look at a lot of that and go, that's going to be exciting until, you know, he gets to the NFL where there's 11 guys who can actually knock the ball loose from him at any moment, as opposed to two or three on a good football team. And then more than anything is that he plays so frenetically. It's, you know, there's a natural pace to his game that is that runs at a high RPM. You know, you can see, and some people will say, well, that, you know, they often said about Peyton Manning, he operated, you know, his feet were always moving, he looked nervous. And what you found really more than anything is that he was under a great deal of control, but his mind operated fast. You could almost kind of look at that as a level of intensity or impatience that was honed and refined to a level of control until, you know, maybe those rare instances or early instances of his game where, you know, he was struggling to acclimate, and he would end up being very impatient. But when you'd see teams that would take advantage of that, you know, Seattle in the Super Bowl, basically baiting Manning to throw it deep, by first giving him Julius Thomas and making him get impatient with the fact that Julius Thomas was going to drop passes after they hammered him early in the game. And then they knew that Manning was going to try and resort to forcing things. And he did. And it was, you know, and you could probably put that up there as one of the worst Super Bowl performances by a quarterback ever. Even though we've been talking about Jared Goff for a good month now, or a couple of weeks now, at least. But I mean, you look at Murray, and I think, you know, when it comes to that speed, yeah, it's wonderful that he can outrun people and that he can buy all of this time. But after I tracked, you know, I watched 10 games over, you know, over the past month and a half, and I just finished up, you know, those games. And I realized that as I'm charting this, that there were like four or five plays out of that 10 game span where he actually did the kinds of things that people celebrate about him, you know, that special ability to create, you know, create space and buy time and throw off platform and be accurate with it. And when I look at it from that standpoint, I'm like, is that really worth it? Is that four to five plays over a 10 game span worth it? And I think part of me says yes, because the weight of those plays can be difference making moments in a game. But then I look at it and go, well, there was one, the most impressive play I saw turned out to be a 9-yard gain on a first and 10 with 6:30 left in the half, and they were up. And it was a type of play that I go, was all that energy expended worth it? Was it worth it? Was it really him? Because when he threw the ball, it turned out to be like a 6-yard completion that had Marquise Brown running back towards the quarterback to such a level of momentum that he literally had to run back to the line of scrimmage and regain all those yards on his own. And his effort was, I thought, was nearly as intense and difficult as what Murray did in the first place to get him the ball. And I'm looking at that and I go, you know, there's this thing about combat where the amount of energy you expend is, you know, is a big deal. You want to talk about how much energy, you got to be aware of the energy you expend so you don't wear yourself out. You want your opponent to expend more energy than you do in most cases. And you want to be very timely about how you expend that. And I don't think Kyler Murray's game is built to that. I think his game is built to, because he's the fastest and quickest, he leans on that to an extent that he ends up having second thoughts and third thoughts on the field. And he gets away with it in the college game to an extent until he starts playing teams that can kind of confuse him or create scenarios for him that kind of hem him in. And at that point, I watch him and I think, I see a confused, inaccurate quarterback who doesn't have the vision he needs to see the field, the accuracy he needs to throw the ball in those situations. It's like to me, by NFL standards, I have concerns that he's going to be easily confused. But I can't deny, like you know, so many of the things that I've seen, like the opposite field throws, the velocity, the pinpoint accuracy downfield, some ability that I've seen pre-snap to make a few adjustments, the ability to look from one side to the other of the field at times. There are times I watch him and he can hitch away from pressure, and it's not just about, you know, running to one spot with his eyes down to another. He actually shows some ability to slide and create space in the pocket. It's not Tom Brady level, but there are some technically sound things that he does footwork wise. So it's like you watch enough of him and I feel like that you see the gamut of everything. The problem is that part of that gamut is stuff that doesn't belong.
And to sort of follow up on some of the things you were just talking about there, like you mentioned the expending of energy. And my mind instantly flashes. And I know you and I have made the boxer to quarterback comparison at times before. You know, my mind instantly flashes to Ali, you know, against, you know, George Foreman. And how Ali went into that game, into that bout with the idea that I'm going to make this guy punch himself out because I know that I will have the energy at the end. Is Kyler Murray Muhammad Ali? Like, do we have that sort of level of confidence that will work in the NFL? I don't know. Or is he George Foreman, where he's going to punch himself out?
Or is he George Foreman? So that's one
question. Another question that I couldn't help but wonder when you were sort of working through this, and again, that's kind of what we're doing. We're kind of working through our ideas on Kyler Murray because we're not done yet. We're not there yet. Is he the Oasis? And what I mean by that is, in this year, this quarterback group, are we that starved for a QB1, for somebody to emerge and be the franchise quarterback, that we are crawling through the desert and we get to what we think is the oasis, we find that it's sand and are we drinking the sand? And yes, I just riffed off of some Aaron Sorkin and The American President. You'll have to, I'll apologize for that. But is that where we're at? Because, and again, not making the one-to-one comparison, but I remember the Vernon Adams year when we think about, and you sort of teed this up at the beginning, the life cycle of a quarterback class. It starts in June. It starts maybe in May, where we start diving into these guys and people get on their heels. And then as we like the guys in August, they start playing. We start to pull away on them and we try to find different guys. And we get to the Vernon Adams level, and that's where people sort of got excited because he was different. He wasn't, you know, a Lynch or a Goff or a Cook or whomever, a Wentz. You know, and are we kind of in that mold where we're starved for something else, that we see those four or five plays like you talk about and think, there we go. You know, that's going to be the guy to hang my hat on. I don't know. You know, and it's hard to balance all of this and then come to a final evaluation on the player himself. And I think that's another reason why he's a hard struggle, because if you take Kyler Murray and drop him into last year's class, where does he rank out? You know, or the year before? Are we talking about him as QB1, or are we talking about him as making QB4 or QB5? But then you have to remember that you have to evaluate the player and not all the other stuff that's going around. So he's going to be a difficult evaluation, and, you know, he may very well end up near the top or QB1 for me. I just don't know. But these are difficult questions. And, you know, the last thing to think about here, at least from where I'm sitting, is, is he just a year or two or three ahead of his time? You know, are we truly seeing that shift of offensive football where, because of the economics and the CBA and how that competitive advantage of having a rookie quarterback and moving towards a more wide open game just outweigh everything else. And so because of what he brings to the table, you just say, look, we can make it work in the NFL for three, 4 or 5 years of his rookie deal. Forget the 3-year development window. Forget developing him at all. We'll just make it work. Like, are we there yet? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think we are, but when that moment arrives, we're going to be behind. You know, I mean, we're probably not going to predict it. So it's like, it's always that. I just remember 10 years ago, it was the tight ends are going to revolutionize the NFL, and they're going to, you know, the hybrid tight end is going to be the big deal. And yeah, there were some guys that certainly came into their own over that period of time, but there were a lot of really nice athletic wide receivers drafted as well, who've just remained athletic wide receivers, and teams didn't go whole hog on the idea that writers and analysts thought it may head. And I think that's part of it too, is that we're trying to predict the future of things that go beyond just the player, but how
what's interesting is, you know, when you talk about the tight ends,
so you touched, go ahead.
The defenses evolved too, you know? And when people were thinking about the tight end revolution, we're going to get these uber athletic guys, defenses evolved to have uber athletic edge rushers on both sides. And when you're an offense trying to slow those guys down, what is the first thing you do? You look to the tight end, you shift him into the formation, you ask him to help in pass protection. Well, what is an uber athletic tight end going to do up against the Von Millers of the world? He's going to get run over. He's going to be a speed bump on the way to seeing your quarterback get smacked. And so the defenses will evolve too. And they are evolving. We're seeing 4-2-5 be the base package. We're seeing 3 safety looks out of 3-3-5 or 3-2-6. You know, Bill Belichick in the Super Bowl we just watched went old school with a 6-1, but he had Patrick Chung aligned as a defensive end. Like, these are the things that are happening. And, you know, you and Ian Stoner had a great piece over at the RSP sort of working through that. And so defenses will evolve too. And the guys that Kyler Murray is outrunning on Saturdays aren't as athletic as the guys he's going to have to try to outrun on Sundays.
Yeah, and if you're watching that happen, then what do the teams do on their offense? Well, they start
maybe
thinking,
we need to go with a 21 personnel with a fullback and run it behind James Devlin at this Chargers 7 defensive back package.
Yeah. I was having this conversation with Stoner. I'll just add this in here, and then we'll move on to the. I think I want to talk about Dwayne Haskins a little bit, but you know, it's kind of funny we mentioned this because he commented to me, we were talking about running backs a little bit and he mentioned, he goes, we're both like, we like Sony Michel, and Sony Michel had a fine season and he's a terrific young back, but we like to joke around that the Patriots still picked the wrong Georgia back because Corey Dillon's in Cleveland. And I think that, but really modern problems. If you're worried about that, that Sony Michel was the wrong back because he's still a pretty darn good player. Dwayne Haskins, you mentioned, I mean, all the process looks right. Sometimes the results aren't there. But I'm a believer in process over results. So, you know, right now for me, if nothing changes, and I have a feeling a lot will, Dwayne Haskins will probably be my number one quarterback on my board. Mainly. And when I look at him, I'm a fan of all the things that you mentioned, just the pre-post snap reading, the ability to, you know, I think the ability to process the game is pretty strong, and I like his toughness. I like how that's the other thing. I like how he handles play in the pocket, how he takes contact, his ability to, work around that. I think that the arm is good enough to make the throws that you're looking for in an offense. So, you know, when I think about that, I was actually a little more impressed watching him and studying him
was that Purdue game. You know, they lost that game. He threw it 73 times. You know, I remember when I, you know, every time I sort of sit down and you know, look at the games I'm going to watch. I always want to see a game where they lose or a game where they struggle, especially on the road, because that's sort of that competitive toughness test. And this sort of had it. A little bit of weather, some flakes were flying in that game. But you watch him and you see him into the fourth quarter when they were down by three scores, and he's standing in the pocket and taking these shots to the chops, and he's still doing the things you want to see your quarterback do. And that really stood out to me. I want to see a quarterback get tested, because you're going to get tested in the NFL on every single snap. And he's battling through that. And he's doing some of the little things that I love to see, those process things. You know, and we can't always know, even when we see on All 22, where the activity pre-snap comes from. If it comes from the sidelines, you know, with those big sort of four picture images of Mike Golic and, you know, Mike Greenberg and you and me, and the defense has to figure out, or the offense has to figure out what that means. But I feel like with him, a lot of it started with him. And you see him sliding and adjusting protection. You see him doing what we were just talking about with the tight end and moving him in to help in protection and things like that. Those little pre-snap things that you're going to be asked to do in the National Football League. You see him move around in the pocket. And no, he's not a running quarterback, Stephen A. Smith. He's the Tom Brady battleship. But he makes it work. He makes those little adjustments, those subtle climbs and those subtle slides that, again, you need to do when you get into the National Football League. I see him manipulate defenders more naturally with his eyes, you know, and it's not just the free safety. You look at him for a second and then you throw the nine ball. Look, my cat can do that. I'm talking about underneath hold defenders in cover one or zone coverage, where he knows I got to move the mic away from this guy if I'm going to throw this backside slant or this backside pivot route. Those types of things that have to get schemed into the situation for Kyler Murray. And so you put the process together. I love the process with him. Sometimes the results aren't there. And then, you know, sometimes it's one of those things where scout the player, not the scheme. And so you see him release the ball and put it to where you might expect the receiver to be, and he's not there. And do you say that's a, you know, demerit for Haskins or not? So I think, like with you, when all is said and done, you know, if you were to ask me right now, who's QB1 out of these two, I'm telling you it's Dwayne Haskins, and it might remain Dwayne Haskins. And I get what Murray brings to the table. But on that question of process or results, I'm still leaning towards process rather than results, because we've seen what works in the NFL and we've seen what doesn't.
Yeah. I think for me, it comes down to, I'd rather be quote unquote wrong about a player or my assessment of a player, because I'm not banking on the unheard of to actually occur.
Right.
You know, or the, you know, something that's never happened yet to actually happen. But at the same time, it depends on what that means. You know, for me, you know, when it came to Vernon Adams, it was, to me, it wasn't so much, you know, maybe it should have been, but for me, it wasn't so much, you know, what is the NFL like and not like, as much as it was, what are the things that I value out of the player? And if it's different than what the NFL values right now, so be it, to an extent. Because sometimes some of the things that we, if we start trying to think what the NFL does, I think that's when we end up going down the wrong way, because it's those exceptional circumstances that actually create new ways for the NFL to think. And so, you know, I think part of that is, you know, Patrick Mahomes. It's just, you know, before the draft, it was a lot of it with Mahomes was, he's too much of a gunslinger. He throws the ball off platform. He doesn't have good footwork. He takes too many chances that won't work in the NFL. And there are a lot of things on that level. And, you know, you and I, when we studied him together and talked about what we saw in the film room, it was more, you know, you use the Zidane kind of, you know, kind of analogy there, that it's not so much that he's bold. He's not, you know, he's bold, not reckless. He's actually, there's moments of genius in here that's disguised as recklessness or gunslinger like mentality. When in fact it's more like it's different than that. And he just needed the right environment. And it's kind of like, at some point you have to look at it and say, I don't really care what the NFL might think, because there's enough evidence here to say that all they have to do is be a little open-minded and it would work out. I don't feel, you know, I don't feel as much that way with Kyler Murray, and I tend to be more the, optimist about the exceptional. I'm a little worried about Murray. Whereas with Haskins, I feel more gravitating towards him and feel like, yeah, that's a player who can be an NFL quarterback, and who can, you know, kind of move forward in that fashion. What about Will Greer? We both seem to gravitate towards him earlier in this year. He didn't have much of a Senior Bowl in terms of, you know, he didn't make the headlines and wasn't the guy that the media was talking about. But from studying the tape, I thought, yeah, he had some bad moments, you know, earlier, you know, early in practice. But watching his tape, just, you know, his tape from the Senior Bowl, I felt like it wasn't as bad as it looked. And then I also looked just at the totality of his career at West Virginia. And I still very much like him as much as I like anyone we just mentioned. You know, and the difficult part for me is he has moments where he has moments in games where you're like, yeah, I wish he didn't do that. You know, like really seriously wish he didn't do that. And then there's things I watch him and go, I don't think there's anybody in his class who does certain things better than him when it comes to, you know, throwing people open in terms of his, you know, you didn't see much of his arm or deep game or vertical game in the Senior Bowl. But when I watch it on tape, I'm looking at him going, this is a guy who I could just see slinging it in the NFL and doing it in a way that would be
Greer's interesting because, like you said, you and I did a video on him earlier this season. We were excited about him. I was excited about seeing him down in Mobile. He was one of my favorite quarterbacks going into that week. And I do think he's had sort of an underwhelming week. I mean, you know, with some of the other guys, you can point to some moments where you were like, okay, this was really good or this was really bad. With him, it was just kind of – he was there. I think my standout moment for him was – you know, in the media scrum after the first set of practices where he looked everybody in the, around him dead in the eye and said, I have the best arm in this class. Ask anybody I ever played against. And you bet I'm throwing up the combine. And so that was kind of one of those like maverick, like I like that in a pilot type moments where you're like, okay, that's pretty bold considering the company you're in, but I kind of like it. I dig it. And so that stood out to me. The thing that's interesting with him is that sort of in a Murray sense, you know, you see those flashes of, okay, this could work in the National Football League. And you and I were talking offline about how you could see him stepping into the huddle in Philadelphia right now and being ready to run that offense because you look at elements of the offense he's running right now and they're right there. And so I think with him, what's interesting is he might be a little bit more scheme dependent than, say, some of the other guys. But if he gets into that right scheme, you can see it totally working. And the other thing that still stands out with him watching him on tape is, you know, with a guy like Drew Lock, there are some scattered throws in the middle of the field between the hash marks. You know, same thing with some of these other guys. He's doesn't care about throwing it anywhere. In the middle, he'll throw guys open. Between the hash marks, between the numbers, he'll throw guys open in the middle of the field with anticipation. And you're going to need to do that in the NFL. You know, you can't live and die numbers and outside in the National Football League. And so you put that together, it's an interesting package. And then becomes the issue that, you know, I don't think I'm spoiling anything when I say you left me a voicemail the other day that literally said, for the cost, give me Will Greer. That was it. That was the Matt Waltman voicemail I got from you. And it makes sense. You know, if you're going to ask me to take Drew Lock at 10 or Will Greer at 45,
yeah,
it's kind of a no-brainer to me. Right.
Yeah. I'd take Will Greer at 155 if teams were down on him over, you know, Drew Lock at 10. But that's, you know, that's my own personal thing at this point. But it's part of it to me is
he seems comfortable in his skin.
Players who embrace their game and yes, he does. And I think that there are players who I watch and I go, sometimes I wonder if you're just playing for a paycheck. Like, you've decided that you're talented. So you're just going to use the resource you have and you're not really striving to get better at everything. And when I see the games of Murray, Locke, I see guys who I feel like that they don't bleed all the resources that they have available to them. And I'm not saying they're not hard workers, because I don't know that. But when I watch their games, it's kind of like, I'm mega talented and I have this one great weapon or two great weapons.
Right.
And I'm just going to use that and lean on it. I'm like the George Foreman hammer. I'm just going to swing heavy bombs, you know, everywhere. And it's like when guys like that get to the league, their games get exposed pretty quickly, you know, and I look at a guy like Greer and I feel like he has more tools in his toolbox, and Dwayne Haskins has more tools in his toolbox. Now, none of them may be like the super duper special, you know, super tool that can, you know, overwhelm, you know, or get the job done in a way that's just really impressive, but they can rely on more. And I think that with Greer, that's exactly the case. He's a pretty darn good, he can move and buy time in the pocket, just like, you know, not like Kyler Murray can, but he can do it to a degree that you feel comfortable with it. And it's also not so much where Will Greer knows. That's the other thing. When I watch right. Kyler Murray, I'm going, all right, so how many yards are you going to run to get three? Whereas with Will Greer, I'm going to know that he may run 30 yards, but I know he's going to deliver a ball that someone's going to be able to make a play on. And it's going to make sense where he threw that ball. I was watching, I don't remember what game it was, but there was one where he had to run around like that. And it should have been a touchdown. It was a throw that he made to Trevon Wesco. That was, you know, it was a difficult throw for Trevesco to reach, but he got his hands on it. And it was one of those plays where it was, you know, off script, off balance, you know, with pressure in his face. But it was, you look at that type of player, and I look at Greer and I go, I think there's going to be an ending to this, you know, that makes sense, where Kyle Murray, right. Murray feels like the 5-year-old who wants to tell you the knock, knock joke, but can't remember the punchline. Whereas, you know, Will Greer is going to remember the punchline. What about, you know, a guy that I know that you didn't like so much, but there's a huge contingent of people who seem to like him. And I kind of do. I kind of like him. I still have more to watch, especially with how he diagnoses things. But it's Easton Stick out of North Dakota State. He had an underwhelming East-West Shrine game, according to many. There are a lot who thought that he should have been at the Senior Bowl instead of the Penn State kid.
He's difficult for me in the sense that he's the mold of quarterback that I love. Okay. Because when we came into this season, you know, I spend my summer getting, you know, a nice background, a nice foundation on all of these quarterbacks. I watched 40 quarterbacks and studied 40 quarterbacks last summer, of which he was on the list. I try to watch 3 or 4 games on them, so I have a frame of reference to see how they do the next year, whether they develop or not. Are there things that I want to see them get better at, and how do they address those? And, you know, Stick to me, when we got into, say, August, I was like, this kid is Logan Woodside plus. And, you know, yes, we just saw Logan Woodside, you know, ball out in week 1 of the AAF, but Logan Woodside was a quarterback that I liked. He was a quarterback that I thought that if the Patriots wanted to address quarterback in day 3 last year, he would be a perfect fit for what they do. Time in a rhythm throws and things like that. And so I looked at Stick and I thought, he's Logan Woodside plus. He had, from my view, and sort of an up and down senior year. I thought that there were some games, like I think it was North Alabama, where I found myself wondering, what is the thought process here? What is he doing? And then there were some other games where he made some throws where I was like, okay, I can see this work. Like, if he has the opportunity to throw 4 verticals, he's going to make you pay. Like, he has that ability to look at that free safety in the middle of the field and move him and deliver on those inside seam routes very well. But then there were other times when, and I think it was a game against, I'm forgetting which game now, but you just, it might have been that South Dakota State game where I'm just like, some of this isn't good. And so I think he's still in that Logan Woodside realm for me. But it's just, I felt more underwhelmed than anything else because he's in that mold of quarterback that I would like, that pocket passer type guy, that smart, heady type guy. Maybe it was just my own expectations for him coming into this year, but I never quite got there with him. I still think that he will hear his name called. I still think that he probably gets drafted on day three. I still think there's a home for him in the National Football League. It's just, he seems now to be that more career backup spot starter type than a guy that you could look at and say, I wouldn't be surprised if he becomes a guy that develops into a starter in this league. So that's kind of where I am with that.
Yeah. And for me, I'm probably leaning more towards, I think maybe he has a chance to develop into a starter in this league. So I'm a little bit more leaning towards the optimistic side with him, but the decision-making is going to be a pivotal part for me because, you know, you see some lateness with his throws. You see him, I see him kind of bypassing throws that he should make. I see him making decisions at times where you look and go, I think I saw what you were trying to do, but it was a disaster, you know? And then at the same time, I watch things like play fakes and his accuracy when he's on platform. And when things are clean and looking good, he can look really good. But when he has to create, he's really up and down because there is the running element. There is some things that he can do, but it's almost like he wants to lean on things that Kyler Murray would lean on, but Kyler Murray actually has the physical skill to execute it more often than what Easton Stick does. And I think that's that's kind of the thing, is that I think part of it too is I just really like the scrappy kind of style in which he plays. He's a football player for sure. But is he a good, you know, NFL quarterback prospect? And I think that I understand where you're at with him. And that's going to, to me, the decision-making is the difficult part for me that I'm trying to assess with him. How about Gardner Minshew? Cause you mentioned him earlier and, you know, I watch him and I feel like everything up to a certain point is great. And then it's the last two things that
Minshew
he does. And I'm just
is
like,
a great example of how things change things?
It's
in this evaluation world, because I just said I watched 40 quarterbacks this summer. Gardner Minshew was not one. Now, so my exposure to him pre-Senior Bowl was with a fresh set of eyes. And I loved him on film for the most part. Yeah. For the most part. You see him and his footwork in the pocket as he works full field read concepts. You know, say it's just mesh, but he's working that wheel. One crosser to the other, to the sit, to the backside curl. And you see the feet timed up with the mind perfectly in sync. And this is art. And I know you've written a lot, Matt, about how can he make music? And that was the sense I got watching him on 75 to 85% of what he's asked to do. You talk to him down at Mobile and he looked me dead in the eye. I asked him a question about what is it about, you know, running the air raid that gets you ready to play in the NFL. And he looked me dead in the eye and he's like, you know, we're running 4 or 5 progression reads, full field reads on every snap, a lot more than those quote unquote college style, pro style offenses. And he literally, Matt, used air quotes. And I was full on swooning. Like, that's one of those moments where you hope the facial filter is in place so the other assembled media don't see you with goo-goo eyes at a quarterback. So that stuff I love, but then you get more than say 15 yards downfield, and then you get more into the, can he create? And it starts to become a little bit unraveled. And so I love 85% of what he does, but does the other 15, where it gets to be a bit of a struggle, outweigh that 85? I don't know. I think I'll still end up with a fairly good grade on him in this class. I think that there are some offenses where I could see him become that long-term backup spot starter type. I'm not sure, similar to Stick, where he gets beyond that, but I still think he finds a home in the NFL for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for me, I think the issue that I have is when he has to maneuver away from pressure and reset and fire – that's where it goes downhill. And can he correct that? That seems like a difficult thing to correct. And that's always the thing that I kind of look at. Yep. But what's funny about this is we talk about Minshew, and of course, Mike Leach is his coach. And I saw Evan Silva have a video that he displayed about Mike Leach discussing that trying to change and fix accuracy is kind of a fool's errand for any coach at any level. And if they're not accurate, you might as well not try. You try and just recruit around that or draft around that. So that brings us to a quarterback who's getting a lot of attention, who has a renowned quarterback coach of note. But when I look at what I've graded thus far, and it's early still, I've still got more to do with him. Or I won't say early, but I'd say I'm about halfway through. And that's Daniel Jones. Like, I don't think he's accurate at all. I don't think he's an accurate quarterback, but he's getting a lot of love. And, you know, I think, well, maybe he's the product of, you know, Cutcliffe. And Coach Cutcliffe certainly has a lot of gravitas in terms of his name in the NFL and in quarterback circles. But it's kind of like, is David Cutcliffe really a guy that tends to be known because he can turn players who otherwise wouldn't be taken, or can he make players better for the college game, but not but once they get to the pros, you start to see the flaws
I'm close to being as out as I get on a quarterback.
And I kind of think that
with Daniel Jones. And I know he's getting a ton of buzz, and there are some things with him that I do like. But in terms of valuation on him, when I hear first round, when I hear top 10, top 15 overall, that's when I start to sort of pull the Homer Simpson back into the hedges kind of move, because he is, to me, a perfect West Coast quarterback in the sense that from the process, the mental point, the mental processing, the placement in the short area. I think he's very good at those types of concepts. But how many pure West Coast systems are left in the National Football League? You know, at some point you're going to have to branch beyond that. And that's where it gets to be a big question mark. And I know we don't want to read too much into how a player performs at the Senior Bowl. But this was, in my mind, the absolute ideal setting for him to set himself apart, because I look at him as a West Coast quarterback, and who's he coaching? Who's he playing for down in Mobile? John Gruden. Okay. Like, this is the absolute ideal marriage. So I thought going in, look, if he balls out, it will make sense. Right. And then right. Again, not trying to read too much into 7-on-7. But that Wednesday practice that we couldn't get to, when I finally got a chance to sit down and watch it, and I finally got a chance to sit down and watch his 7-on-7, these were his first three plays in 7-on-7. And again, ideal offense, but it's 7-on-7, so there's no pressure. You should be able to like make your mind up quickly and get the ball out and make the right reads. He throws a speed out to the left. Again, a 5-yard out. This is his game, and he misses it by like 5 yards. His second throw is a check down to the running back again in the left flat that he stares down and he gets picked 6. His third throw is a comeback route along the left side that he stares down, double clutches, sees his receiver fall down, still throws it, and it gets picked 6. And that's kind of the proverbial put the pen down moment where you're like, I have seen enough. And so Daniel Jones, to me, has his moments. He had a throw against Virginia on an Ohio concept, go route on the outside, slot receiver runs the speed out. He sees the cornerback trap it. Then he throws the whole shot again along the boundary. Nice throw. It was a very nice play. But that was like one of 4 or 5 plays with him where you're like, I can see this working. The majority of it, I don't. And the Cutcliffe connection thing, is that a chicken and the egg problem? Because who are the quarterbacks he's known for working with? Peyton Manning and Eli Manning. And it's like, those guys probably would have been successful had I been coaching them. And I don't know what I'm talking about. And so put that all together, I'm as far out as I could possibly be on a quarterback, especially if you're telling me him in the first round. Nah, not me.
Yeah, right now, Daniel Jones has been.
Yeah.
Where is he located? Oh, you know what? He's 19th on my list right now of players that I've scored. I haven't looked as many quarterbacks as you. I've looked at about 25, and he's currently in the 19th position before I, you know, finish up, and I've got more to do with him. But yeah, heading into the Senior Bowl, he was low, and I've kept hearing about first round, and I thought, well, you know, people said that about who's that tall kid out of Arizona State, Brock Osweiler? Yeah. I remember Brock Osweiler, the love for Brock Osweiler, and I didn't get that. I don't get Daniel Jones. So, but you know, the SID loves him very much. 5,000 words on his bio. So, you know, he's being loved somewhere. So that's, you know, that's all good. I have to say that, folks, because my wife's, you know, matriculated at UNC, and I was basically told that if I asked once hypothetically if our kid got an athletic scholarship to go to Duke,
well, there you
what
go.
Would happen? And she said, well, he won't be going there. And I said, well, what if they really wanted to? She go, well, you'd have to move out of the house too. So I got the Chris Spielman's father treatment out of my wife, you know, which was basically like, yeah. So yeah. Anyway, who else on this list for you was anyone else that's been kind of especially confusing?
I think that's fair. I think what's interesting with Locke
to me,
is that
kind of reminds me,
similar to Jones, I think that he's somewhat scheme specific. Look, if you want to push the ball downfield, there you go. You know, he's got the arm for it. He's expanded his ability into becoming more of a well-rounded passer. The past year under Derek Dooley, I saw, you know, more stuff in the middle of the field. You know, it wasn't all hitches and goes and smokes and slants like it was his first 2 years I studied him. You know, I thought he had a nice week down in Mobile. I think he sort of is what he is. I don't know if there's going to be an expansion of his all-around skill set once you get to the NFL. So I think there will be some scheme limitations. But I think what was interesting about studying Jones and Locke during that week down in Mobile is that one of those guys sort of lived up to the billing and I think helped himself and probably made some people feel more comfortable with him. And one of the guys didn't. And I think Locke was the guy that sort of did. He said it did all the right things, seemed to be developing or at least fix it in some sense, the footwork, because that is an issue with him. I mean, he's out there throwing fall away jumpers on 9 routes, you know, and it's like, again, he's going to work on Saturdays, not going to work all the time on Sundays, but you see the footwork getting a little bit better. And so, you know, I don't think he's that hard of an eval. I think it's just the interesting part of him is not the evaluation part, but the valuation part. Like, how high do you value his skill set, given that it might be sort of a schematic limitation with him, but yet we know he has the big arm that the NFL kind of tends to like. So I think the eval part's kind of easy. The valuation part might be a bit harder.
Yeah, and I look at this class overall, and it just seems to me like what we seem to be saying is there might be one guy who could turn into a star quarterback, and there's maybe two other guys who might surprise, two or three guys who might surprise and become better than we expected as a starter. But me personally, when I think about this class, part of me just wants to say, here, I've rated them for you. I've told you their strengths and weaknesses. I'm going to give you my thoughts on what could happen in a perfect world, what, you know, or what could happen in closer to optimal conditions or even just favorable conditions. But, you know, if one of them busts out and is great, I feel like I'm going to be saying 2-3 years from now, I'm going to go, yeah, I didn't identify that. I didn't identify any of that. It's not like where we came in with firm opinions about a guy like Mahomes and said, this guy could be really special in the right situation, or even willing to die on a hill and go, listen, I still think Chad Kelly could be a dynamite player if he could get his head right and be a solid, mature citizen of the world, as opposed to just a guy who's talented on the football field. but I'd still right. die
no,
on that hill.
No, it's not. And
you know,
if there is one hill that I am pretty much ready to die on
this class,
it's Brett Rippenhill.
That's not a lot.
And that kid, I have been on this hill for a while. And maybe it's just a situation where the NFL clearly doesn't view him the same way I do, you know, because he wasn't down in Mobile. And you see some of the other quarterbacks that were there and you're just kind of like, okay, well, that's interesting. But I watch him and I see the process. I see the experience factor. And yeah, there are some limitations and holes to him. Right. But for me, I'm kind of getting to the point where I'm like, okay, in this class, it's like – you know, Murray and Haskins and Locke and maybe Greer and maybe Rippon. And then the rest of the guys, I'm just kind of like, all right, well, maybe. But with Rippon, I see the process and I see him adjusting the protections and doing those little things and standing in the pocket and making some throws on third and 10 where even the blitz doesn't get picked up that he identified pre-snap and taking that hit and delivering and doing some of those small little process things like we talked about with Haskins with moving defenders with his eyes and understanding leverage and when he gets a different look in the secondary, knowing what to do with it after the snap. And I think this could work in the National Football League far beyond some of the other guys that we've talked about. And I know the Parcells rules get like thrown out the window because everybody leaves school after 2 years. So you're not going to get the number of starts and the number of wins and all that stuff. But there are teams that still buy into that. And he hit checks all of those boxes. And so when it comes down to it, if you're going to tell me that, you know, there's a quarterback that you can draft on the third day and you can address other positions and go get a guy that could be a starter in the NFL, I'm going to say that's Brett Rippert and that's round four. And I'm completely fine with a team doing that. And if it just so happens to be the New England Patriots, there's going to be a small part of me that's going to fight the urge and resist the urge to giggle and say, you fools, you let it happen again. You know, and I'm not saying that he's Tom Brady, but I'm just, there are things that he does that will work in the National Football League. And if you can get that in the fourth round or the fifth round, it's probably pretty good value.
Well, somebody who I know checks all the boxes certainly is a first day pick when it comes to what we do in this space.
It's always a blast, Matt. Look forward to continuing this conversation as this draft process unfolds. And I mean, look, we can already start talking about next year's class because obviously, as we've just talked about, it's going to be better, right? I know.
Yeah, I just plugged my ears on that point. Okay. Great. Well, thank you everyone for listening once again. You know, this is the RSP cast available on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, Blueberry, and Google Play. And, you know, please rate and review if you have some feedback that you'd like to give. And you can certainly give that feedback also at mattwaldmanrsp@gmail.com. You can email me there and let me know if you have a little more that you'd like to talk about or suggestions that you have. And you can find Mark at the RSP site, www.mattwaldmanrsp.com, as well as Pro Football Weekly, Inside the Pylon, The Score, and Big Blue Review. And you can also check him out on his podcast, Locked On Patriots, does excellent work, as you can tell. And the RSP, listen, We've got the film room on YouTube. We've got Mark's First Sound, which is also on YouTube. He also does the RSP NFL lens and the scouting lens. Does a lot of fine work on those videos that I would definitely recommend, available there. And then there's, of course, the RSP publication, which is coming out April 1st. Well on its way to having somewhere between 185 to 190 players. More than ever before because of these juniors coming out and that will be available. That's available for pre-order. You can pre-order a login and password to get that publication. It's been available since 2006. There's a video tour on my site, mattwaldmanrsp.com or mattwaldman.com is the order site. And pretty straightforward. You'll find the information you need. You can ask around if you're new to it and wondering about whether you want to take the plunge. I think you'll be pleasantly shocked. Thanks again. You guys have a great weekend.